This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
The update from One Bills Drive. Police in Florida have charged New England Patriots owner Bob Kraft with misdemeanor solicitation of prostitution. They say they have video of him paying for a sex act inside an illegal massage parlor. He's 77 years old. Police in Jupiter, Florida say he has not been arrested, but a warrant will be issued. The charge comes amid a widespread crackdown on sex trafficking in the area around Palm Beach County, Florida. In a statement, a spokesperson for Kraft said they categorically deny that Kraft engaged in any illegal activity, and they will issue no further comment. A shocker, a stunner from the National Football League. Broncos quarterback Case Keenum says he was shocked by the trade for Joe Flacco last week. He says he plans on competing for the starting quarterback job in Denver. Says, I was definitely shocked. It was a surprise, and for the first day or so especially, the trade for Joe Flacco may signal the end of Keenum's run as Denver Broncos starting quarterback. Ohio State quarterback Dwayne Haskins will officially throw at next week's NFL scouting combine. Previously, he said he would participate in all drills. The combine starts next week in Indy. Mel Kiper has Haskins as number 5 on his big board. Patriots safety Devin McCourty, who said he might retire if the Patriots won the Super Bowl, will be back for a 10th season in Florida. He's an 8-time Patriots captain. He is 31 years old. Sabres have lost 4 in a row. Last night, they lost 2-1 in Tampa Bay to the Lightning in a shootout. Rasmus Dahlin scored his 7th goal of the season for Buffalo. Carter Hutton made 39 saves. Next up, the home game tomorrow, 1 p.m. against the Washington Capitals at KeyBank Center. College basketball, 3 teams locally in action tonight. The UB Bulls, ranked 25th in the country, home to play Kent State, the middle game of a 3-game homestand. The game also televised on ESPN2 tonight, 7 o'clock from Alumni Arena. Buffaloes won 23 straight games at home. Canisius on the road. They'll be on national TV tonight on ESPNU when they play at Monmouth. The Griffs saw their 3-game win streak end over the weekend. And the Purple Eagles of Niagara on the road at Rider today at Rider University, their final road swing of the year. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker in our One Buffalo studio. Joined now by one of our favorite guests, longtime NFL on CBS commentator, works on Steve's crew. He is a former NFL quarterback for 17 seasons with Minnesota, Washington, Kansas City, and Oakland. NFL MVP in 2002. Happy to have Rich Gannon on the line with us. Hi, Rich. John Murphy and your buddy Steve Tasker up here in Buffalo.
Murph, Steve, how are you guys?
Good. Great. And by, just for the record,
I knew you.
Just for the record, I worked on your crew. You didn't work on my crew.
You know what? Murph, you know as well as anybody, his toughness, his determination, but more importantly, he's the ultimate team guy. It was awesome working with Steve Tasker. It was a privilege.
Yeah, well, let me tell you. You bring me to a good point about being a teammate. We've been talking about Ben Roethlisberger and the heat he's taken in Pittsburgh about the kind of leader he is or is not. Certainly, he's a great player. You know that as well as I do, Rich. What do you make of this criticism being leveled at him from some of his teammates about how he's treated differently inside the building?
Well, look, I think he's a terrific player, Steve, as you point out. And just because you're a great player doesn't mean you can't get better at your craft. And that means not just on the field in terms of the mechanics and of playing the position, but also on his off the field in terms of how you deal with your teammates. I think I got better at that as I got further along in my career. I had a better understanding of the younger players. I think at times I had a better temperament. But I think, you know, if you've been on good teams, a lot of the in-house stuff stays in-house. If there's disagreements or there's arguments, if there's a point of contention, I think it's best handled in the locker room. It's best handled with the coaching staff and the players and not let it get outside the building. And I think what happened in Pittsburgh this year, starting with Le'Veon Bell, and then, of course, with, you know, obviously Antonio Brown late in the season. See, you and I did that game in Week 17, and right. He didn't play, and that was – look, they were fortunate to, you know, they're fortunate to win that game, and they got off to a really slow start. And I think a big reason why is they didn't have Antonio Brown on the field. So, you know, you hate to lose good players, but this is the ultimate team game. And my sense is that he was becoming a major distraction. But in hindsight, looking back, you know, you hate when it gets outside the building. You hate when it makes it into the front front page of the morning paper that there are issues and problems within the ranks of the team.
Did it surprise you that the general manager rushed to Ben's defense, even though Ben
no.
made yeah, right.
No, and I, look, he's won multiple Super Bowls. I think he's clearly a Hall of Fame quarterback, and I think that I think when they looked under the hood, they realized that more of the issues were with Antonio Brown. And look, this goes back to when Todd Haley was there as the offensive coordinator. I mean, he went ballistic on the sidelines. Look, he's an emotional player. But, you know, at that position, Steven, you know better than I do because you played it. But, I mean, it's a – and you were fortunate because you played with some unselfish, like, Andre Reed, James Laughlin, and some of these guys. I think they're the exception rather than the rule. I think when you look at, some of the prima donnas, Odell Beckham Jr. and other guys that have had issues at that position. When it becomes more about them and their catches and their production and less about winning, then I think you've got an issue. I think Antonio Brown is a phenomenal player. He works hard. I get all that. But if it's more about him and less about the team winning championships, then you've got to nip it in the bud.
Hey, Rich, Steve and I were talking last hour about Kevin Colbert, the GM's, I guess, defense of Roethlisberger or sticking up for him. And, he kind of went over the top, I thought, talking about 52 other guys have to follow him. He is the leader. He restated that point over and over again. And yet, the more we talked about it and thought about it, I thought, what else could the GM do, right? He can't just walk away from Roethlisberger at this point. That would be a disaster.
Well, I think they've already started looking at the future. I mean, I think that they've tried to – Ben's not getting any younger. He's taken a lot of hits over the years. Who knows, at some point he may just decide to go play golf in the off season and not play football. And I think that each draft, in talking to Kevin, I think they've actively been very active participants looking for that future at the quarterback position. Now, they haven't stepped up to use a first-round pick on it, but at some point they probably will. But I think they feel like he's got a couple good years left in him. There's another Super Bowl to be had from a Steelers perspective. I think it's about surrounding him with great players. The one thing I like about the Steelers guys, it really goes back with the Patriots too. They're not big on drafting receivers in the first round. I don't say they devalue that position, but I think they feel like they can get some really good quality players in the third, fourth round and bring them into that program and that system and train them the right way and get production out of them as opposed to spending a first round pick on or another team that just going to be very active in free agency when it comes to that position. They're not going to give a guy $30 or $40 million to play a wide receiver. And I think that's why they were able to move on from Le'Veon Bell. I mean, I think it's all about the team in Pittsburgh.
How would you have handled this situation with Antonio Brown if you were Ben Roethlisberger? What would you have done differently than he did?
Well, it's hard to speculate, Steve, because I wasn't in the locker room. I know that I played with guys that were really tough to play with. I played with Chris Carter, the Hall of Famer. Quite frankly, in all the years that I played, he was probably the hardest guy I ever had to deal with. As good as he was, I don't know if there's no other way to put it, he was a pretty selfish guy. He was very concerned about him and his numbers and things like that. And so I also played with guys like Art Monk and Jerry Rice and Tim Brown, and they weren't that way. So I think the best thing you can do is have conversations with them on the practice field, have conversations with them in the locker room, in the weight room, just trying to develop a relationship and a trust factor. It's so important that you trust one another. And I think when you have the trust factor, whether it's with the coaches or players, then you can I think, have better relationships. And I'm not suggesting that their relationship wasn't any good. I'm just saying I think it was strained. I think there were some incidents that happened. We heard about the incident the week we were there that, on the practice field, there was a football was thrown at during a walkthrough, and I think Antonio threw it at Ben, or Ben threw it at Antonio. I can't hardly remember now, but he left the practice field, didn't practice, and then of course there was they said that they were arresting him on Wednesday, didn't practice on Thursday, but we didn't get the straight scoop from Mike Tomlin, and now suddenly find out on Sunday that he's not going to play. In fact, he's not even going to dress, and he leaves the field at halftime. So to me, that's a distraction. When you have a distraction, you don't handle it. From a football perspective, it can linger and become a big issue for your football team.
Rich Gannon played 17 seasons in the NFL, 4 Pro Bowl appearances. One more question I have on the Steelers, Rich. We've talked about the Steelers all week, Steve and I. You just mentioned about the way Tomlin handled the last week of the season. I can't help but think that this whole mess that they have in Pittsburgh is really Mike Tomlin's job to straighten out. I sat here and Steve played on some pretty tough Bills teams that had some issues, and Marv Levy did whatever he could to keep that group together, to keep things under wraps when they didn't want stuff public. That's, and unfortunately, I would admit, in the NFL, that's part of what the head coach's job is, right, to manage all these outsized egos, and I don't know if Tomlin's done that there.
I think if you really sat down with Mike Tomlin, and he's about as honest a guy to deal with as there is in that position, that I think, you know, maybe not in a production meeting, but I think he would share with you that in hindsight, he maybe could have done some things differently. Hey, look, it's hard to manage, you know, 53 different players and personalities, and it can be a challenge. And I think that, you know, Bill Belichick does it as well as anybody, but he also has those Super Bowls and the cred to be able to do it. And, you know, Tomlin does as well. He's won Super Bowls. But I think the challenge with him is just being consistent, right? I think when you're consistent, whether the player is a 10-year veteran or, you know, second-year player, that we're consistent with our rules and the structure and the discipline that we have within the organization. I just, for whatever reason, you know, Antonio Brown, with the more production he had, it just seemed like it became more and more of a challenge to manage and to monitor his situation.
Rich, I got one last thing for me I got to ask you. Do you think at the end of that season, and you were right, we did them in Week 17, and this is a Steelers team, in my opinion, particularly if you put Le'Veon Bell on that squad with Antonio Brown, Ben Roethlisberger, the offensive line they have, and the defense that they put on the field, does this mess, all this drama that surrounded the Steelers, that kept them not only out of the playoffs, but for me, kept them from being a team that would go deep into the play. I'm not saying they're a Super Bowl championship team, but man, oh man, you talk about underachieving. This drama really was the thing that hamstrung their entire ability to be successful and even get to the playoffs.
You're right, Steve. I think that if they would have gotten into the playoffs, I think it would have been very interesting because they were kind of humming a little bit on offense with Antonio Brown. And, of course, you know, James Conner was getting healthy again, and he was back rolling. And so, you know, look, if Cleveland would have beaten Baltimore in Week 17, of course, Pittsburgh did what they had to do. They beat Cincinnati at home. Then, you know, the Steelers would have won the division and, of course, been in the playoffs, and I think it would have been interesting. I'm not suggesting that they would have been able to go win the Super Bowl, but they've matched up and they've played the Patriots pretty tough over the years. And it's one of those would have, could have, should have type of things. But they were good enough. I think they were playing better defensively in the second half of the season to do some damage in the postseason.
Hey, Rich, last thing before we let you go, and all of our quarterback discussions here in Buffalo, certainly we all have Josh Allen in the back of our mind. Do you have any observations on what you saw from Josh Allen's rookie year, both in terms of the leadership component that we've talked about and just in terms of play? What did you think?
I think he has a lot of the intangibles that you really like at that position. I think he's got some toughness. I think he's got some aggressiveness to him. I think he's a smart player. I think he can make plays outside the pocket with his legs. Clearly, I think he gained a lot of experience in year one. I think he gained the trust and the respect and the confidence, really, of his teammates and the coaching staff. I think we usually see a lot of progress from year one to year two with quarterbacks. I think it's a positive that the Bills aren't changing offensive coordinators and systems once again. I think the opportunity to be with Brian Daboll is going to help him this offseason. I think we just look back at his body of work. He's got to get better, I think, trusting his feet, being a little bit more quieter in the pocket, going through the progressions and the reads, and not being so quick to pull it down at times because he knows he can run with the football. But I think completion percentage is something that has to improve significantly. I think the decision-making, especially in third down and those type of situations, the touchdown-interception ratio wasn't very good. But look, you know, I think he played on a young team, a developing team on offense, an offense I think that's going to get better when they address some issues, especially on the offensive line. I think they've got to be able to rely on a more consistent running game and add some more playmakers. Steve and I talked about, you know, the depth at the wide receiver position, and now not only the wide receiver position, but now the tight end position. So they've got to get better around him. I think they'll do that. But I think there's a lot to like when you really study his game. He's got to be a little bit more judicious when he runs the football and protecting himself. In my opinion, he took way too many unnecessary hits last year in Buffalo.
Yeah, probably right. Yeah. Rich,
thanks
for
Rich.
This.
You guys are the best. Talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Bye, man.
Rich Gannon, 17 seasons quarterback in the NFL, 4 Pro Bowl appearances, 2 Pro Bowl MVPs, and the league's MVP in 2002. Rich joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, presented by Subway Restaurants, proud to be locally owned and operated.
Yeah, Rich is a take-no-prisoners kind of leader, too. You know, he's certainly the thing that sets him apart is the fact that, like you say, he was, like he said, you got to be unselfish. Rich didn't care whether he handed it off 25 times or had to throw 50 times, either one. He wanted to win, and he appreciated guys who were that way. And I think that's what makes guys credible in the huddle. As you can tell, he played with Chris Carter, and he said he was really tough to deal with because he was always worried about getting his K. He wanted the ball, no matter what the situation, no matter what, whether it was best or not. He wanted the football, and Rich was one of those guys that certainly was willing to do just about anything to win and put the hours and ground it out in order to do that. And that gave him a lot of credibility, I think, with the Raiders late in his career, his ability to do that.
You guys have you're going to laugh, but you have a really strong broadcast. I love Kevin Harlan, loved him for years.
Kevin's a rock star.
He's unbelievable.
He does everything, and he's really good.
You do a great job on the sidelines, but among the many good things about your CBS team is Rich Gannon's honesty. I always get the sense like he doesn't care if he's making friends. He's out here. I mean, there was, who is it, Matthew Stafford he was blasting earlier this year?
He doesn't care if he makes friends. He thinks he's being honest. And, and even if it is his own opinion, he'll tell you it's his own opinion. But he's feels, and he'll tell you why he feels that way. And a lot of us, and me included, it's hard to go out there and rake a guy over the coals because you know how hard it is to play.
Yeah.
But Rich has an expectation of excellence, and he holds guys to that even in his analyst job. And he's good at it. I agree with you. I'm glad he's doing it, and I'm on the sidelines for him, you know.
You got a different assignment.
I got a different job.
Talking about quarterbacks, and what type of leader do you want at quarterback? We got phone lines open if you'd like to discuss. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. What type of leader do you want? Do you need a guy who yells and, you know, slaps butts and encourages people? Do you need a guy who – look, I think – and you can speak to this more than I can, Steve. Sometimes some of the best leaders are the guys who are quiet, right, and just go out and do their job, play well, show you that they're playing well, show you how hard they work at it, and keep their mouth shut, right? That could be a good leader.
Oh, absolutely. But also, I mean, you're living in a world where you got 53 guys. You want to get to know those guys. If you're a quiet guy, you don't open. You got to open up, and you got to have a guy. And the most effective leaders are the ones the guys know really well, feel like they know really well. You don't have any secrets. You don't have any hidden agendas. You don't have some sort of you don't have anything that you're keeping from the team or that's against the team's best interest. Now, if you want to, I'll give you an example. If you've got an incentive that you've got so many interceptions and the team tries to throw a 70-yard pass on 4th and 14 and you intercept it instead of just knocking it down, that's not good for the team, you know, that kind of thing. That's a selfish play. So, and it's an easy example. But when guys trust you that you are all about winning and you don't care if your role is big or large or if you look good or if you look bad, if the team wins and you're happy, genuinely happy, listen, there's you're in. They're going to play hard for you. They're going to pull for you. They're going to help you be better. They're going to, you know, expect you to help them be better. They're going to be unselfish with you. It's just – it works that way. I'll give you another example, Murph. Coaches are the same way. Every time a coach gets up in front of the media and he has turmoil or strife on his team, invariably they come out and they spin it to the positive, or they defer it, or they just tell you an out and out lie to the media. And we all know they're not telling the truth, but they're doing it so that their players don't have to deal with a big issue. If he says something in the media will run to the player and say, "Hey, he said this about you. What do you say about him?" And then all of a sudden you're in an argument. Without even having to discuss it. It's group dynamics at its best. You're not included in the group. I'm sorry. And that's what the media is. They're not included in the group. They can only be a detriment to the love and respect in the locker room by going to he said, she said, what do you think about this? Don't you feel that quarterback should have thrown it to you on that play? That kind of stuff. It's detrimental to the good of the team. That's why you get guys standing up in front of the media doing what they do. They're good team players. They're not going to throw members of their team under the bus.
Hey, what do you think? What type of leader do you want in your quarterback? Give us a call. The phone line's open, or we can discuss. From the tweet sheet, Brian Cook tweets this in. Leadership at the quarterback position is like math skills to a physicist. It's required, he says. He's right. He says, as to the type, Good leaders adapt to the situation at hand. Sometimes a steady hand is required. Others, fire and fury. Good leaders know when to use the carrot and when to use the stick. Very good points, all of them from Brian Cook, I think.
Very much so. But it's got to be who you are. I mean, if you got to do it within the scope of your own personality. Some guys are really good at some of that, and some guys are really bad at some of that. And it's a mix. And a great team, if you've got a quarterback that's good at some of it and not good at others, you hope you've got some other prominent player on your team that is good at it, and he'll take over in that spot. And that works very well. It worked very well on teams that I was on, and then I've seen it work others well for other teams as too. So it's a group, and different guys can lead at different moments. And if they have the same love and respect and, you know, and unselfish nature that that's the rest of the guys, the quarterback does, he can certainly step into that role for a given moment. It's and it works well that way.
The Steelers situation is what brought this up as a show topic today. We've been talking about the Steelers for a couple of weeks. When Antonio Brown says Roethlisberger acts like he's an owner, calling out teammates, I think he has a point there, Steve. I really do. And I look, I'm not endorsing what he did at the end of the year, you know, backing out from his team at the end of the year. But I think it's a legitimate point, right? No matter how strong a leader you are, even if you're the only guy there who's played in a Super Bowl, as Kevin Colbert, the GM, pointed out, even if you're the unquestioned leader of the team, as Colbert pointed out, you can't go too far. You can't go too far in calling out teammates.
Well, here's the thing, and I think it got to the point for Antonio Brown and obviously some of those other players. Not only was Ben being difficult to deal with, at the same time he was openly being rewarded for it by coaches and or management. And the player, and then we got guys revolting. You got guys walking off the reservation for this. Forget it. If he's going to act like that and you're going to tell him it's okay, I am done. And for a guy who has hit the home run with his contract, he doesn't have, you know, he's made a pile of money. I don't have to put up with this. He's a great player. He's given him 9 years of his career and by every single account, has worked extremely hard and been a great teammate.
Exceeded expectations.
Exceeded, no question, exceeded expectations. He's like, listen, this. He stood up and said, hey, that's wrong, and I'm not going to be a part of it. That took a lot of courage for him. Now, there's no question there are more professional and adult ways to handle it than Antonio Brown did by throwing kind of a public tantrum. But nevertheless, you can understand the reasoning behind it.
Don't you wonder how much of any of this contributes to Le'Veon Bell's situation? I know his is money. But you wonder if in the back of his mind he's thinking, I want more money. I don't need it. I want more money. And I don't know if I want to go back there and have this guy, this false owner, criticize me, maybe publicly, you know, call me out. You know what I mean? I wonder. There's no evidence of that. But
no evidence. I think this started long. I think Le'Veon Bell – his situation is on. You know,
it's a couple years old.
It's all about the money. It's all about the contract situation. And I think before this season, if Le'Veon Bell had come back to the Steelers this year and played for the franchise tag, they would have run the football twice as much as they did. I'm guessing, but they would have given Le'Veon Bell 400 carries this year. They would have used him up. And he wants to be fresh and ready to play for a new contract and get more money down the road. And he just feels like he wouldn't have been ready to do that had he played for the franchise tag and they'd given him the money and used him up for 400 carries. Because you look at cross history, guys who have carried the ball a lot like that amount in a season, they were sometimes never the same after that. So he did what he thought was best. I don't think it had as much to do with Ben Roethlisberger as it did just about the zeros on the contract.
Call here from Pat on the line. Hello, Pat. Welcome.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Outstanding.
Good, Pat.
The thing that got me about Josh, and it was one specific play. It was a pick six he threw late in the season. The way he went after that guy who picked off the ball and tried to tackle him, it reminded me so much of Kelly.
Yeah.
Go back to the days when Kelly, you know, he had a unnecessary roughness by tackling a guy out of bounds. Mm. This guy fits Buffalo. He's collar. He's gritty. You know, I'm sure I'd like a higher percentage of completions and stuff like that, but he really does fit Buffalo. And as far as Pittsburgh, you know, Kelly criticized people on his offensive line, and management held it. you know, they went after him. They said, Jim, you can't do this. And, Steve, you correct me if I'm wrong. So, you know, part of that has got to go back to the coach on Pittsburgh.
That's right. You're right. And
that's what I've been saying.
Yeah, and Jim did. I mean, he called out Howard Ballard in, I think it was 89. We were the bickering Bills in 1989. And largely it was because of Jim's inability to be a good teammate. He had some growing pains to do. And luckily we had some other guys on the team who were just as strong and just as great a player in their own right to stand up and say, you ain't doing that. You ain't doing that. And they were backed by the head coach and the GM, Marv Levy and Bill Poley. And those guys came to Jim and said, listen, you better start being a better teammate. You can't do that. And Jim, to his credit, listened. And
by the way, it's worth pointing out the different approach in Pittsburgh, where the general manager says, oh, yeah, he can speak out against his teammates. He can say what he wants. I'm talking about Roethlisberger.
That's totally different approach. Totally different. And I'll tell you what. They had that meeting, and for the remainder of those three games in 1989, we won one of them. If we won all three, we were in the playoffs. And I think if we won two out of the three, we were in the playoffs for sure. And we won one out of the three games that remained on our schedule, and we got some help and still made it into the playoffs. And it ended up being 1989. We lost in a wild card round in Cleveland.
Yeah, you beat the Jets in the finale, 37-0.
And that got us into the playoffs with some help. That last three games of that season, after they had that meeting where Bill Poley and Marv Levy had told Jim, say, hey, listen, we're not going to be that. You're not going to let you do that. You know, you can't be that kind of teammate. And Jim listened to him. And you could feel the difference in the locker room.
Well, wasn't there tension? Or was it?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Was it all kumbaya right away? Like, okay, I'm sorry.
It was different on the field. It was different on the field. Jim started cheering for Bruce. He started appreciating the player Bruce was, and Bruce reciprocated. Huh. They started, you know, they did do what you say, slapping high knees and cheering for each other. The moment they started cheering for each other, everything changed for that team. And at the end of that game, I'm telling you this, if Ronnie catches that ball in the corner in Cleveland, we are tough to beat.
How did that happen that they started cheering for each other?
They had that meeting we're just talking about. They got together. They had a few pops together. They realized neither one of them.
Was Marv or Pauline involved in that meeting?
Yeah. I don't know if it was a meeting with all of them or whether it was piecemeal, whether he had a meeting with Marv, then with Bill, then him and Bruce got together. But I know this. Jim and Bruce went out, had a few pops, and decided they were going to be friends instead of enemies. And Cornelius Bennett was in there too. And Thurman.
Thurman, yeah.
And Darryl. All those guys, they decided, you know what, we're in this together. And this was before free agency, too, which was a huge boost because they knew, listen, we're not going anywhere. They're not letting us out of here. The Bills have our rights, and we're not going anywhere. We may as well be buddies.
Yeah.
So let's do it. So they decided they were drinking buddies. And from that moment on, everything changed for all the guys like me down the line. And when those guys were happy-go-lucky and having fun and cheering for each other, we were all in on it, and it changed everything, and that team went to four straight Super Bowls as a result.
I keep thinking, and the caller mentioned it too, that there is a role that Mike Tomlin should have played already and
they blew
has
it.
To play now.
They've completely blown it. Ben's sounds like he's a monster, out-of-control monster,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
He's like just does whatever he wants in that building, and everybody's got to fall in line. Everybody has to do whatever else they do.
Yeah, and he gets endorsed by the GM this week, Kevin Colbert.
And I mean, listen – two-time winning Super Bowl quarterbacks are hard to find.
Yeah,
they don't just fall off the tree, and I get that. But they wasted these last couple of years of not getting into the playoffs and playing well because their leadership at the top of their roster, meaning Ben, has been ineffective. And that's on Ben. You know, I mean, I think.
What do you think of the Steelers, how they've handled Roethlisberger, and what do you think of the leadership for quarterbacks in general? What do you want in a leadership profile from your quarterback, including Josh Allen? Got phone lines open to discuss at 803-0550 and toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Speaking of the Steelers, speaking of Colbert, he went on NFL Network today and said that three teams have reached out about Antonio Brown acquiring him in a trade.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Sure.
We'll talk about that. We'll talk about what we know about Bob Kraft. We don't know much, but we'll give you an update when we come back. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, One Bills Live. Hey, we do not have a show next Monday.
It's coming Monday.
This coming Monday.
Really?
Hockey, you knew that. Trade deadline day in the NHL
so
on Monday.
Interesting that we don't have a show.
The instigators will be here for 5 hours of trade speculation. Basically, they'll talk about all the trades being made that do not involve the Buffalo Sabres.
They don't think the Sabres are going to do anything, do they?
Yeah, no, that's what they said on the way out today.
We'll see. I don't know.
So next Monday, it's 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. for the instigators, trade deadline day in the NHL. Next week, we've got some special shows coming up from the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis, Indiana. Next Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, February 27th, February 28th, March 1st, 12 noon, 3 p.m. from the Combine. We'll be right there on Radio Row amid the din and hubbub, talking to NFL figures, lining up some of our guests as we speak. We're getting guys lined up to talk about the Combine, some of the draft prospects down there. Bills have 10 draft picks. So the Combine coverage starts next Wednesday here on the show. You looking forward to that, Steve? We're going to drive down to Indy. You up for that? We got it down to a science here. I think it's 6.5, 7 hours. Does that sound about right? Yeah, I know. But you know what? If you're flying, it'll take you 6 hours anyway, right? Start to finish? It will.
Yeah, but you and I could sit like away from Jay Harris, right? We have to sit right next to him now. I mean, it's like
He'll leave us at the
Chick-fil-A in Erie.
Chick-fil-A is always an important part of the trip to Indy. Maybe less so now that we have one right around the corner. There have been pullovers by Ohio State troopers that have been yes. No tickets.
See, I'm all up for that.
No, I'm not.
I'm not going to be dancing
to get out of that ticket.
Oh, yeah.
But it worked. At any rate, hope you join us next Wednesday, Thursday, Friday from the NFL Scouting Combine. The big news in the NFL today, it's a shocker. There's no question about that. Patriots owner Bob Kraft named as one of those involved in a prostitution ring in Florida, but not the only one involved. Adam Schefter said on ESPN that Kraft is not the most famous person involved in this sting operation. Someone else whose name has not surfaced yet, better known than Bob Kraft. He's charged, Kraft is, with misdemeanor solicitation of prostitution. Police in Jupiter, Florida say they have videotape of him paying for a sex act inside an illegal massage parlor. A widespread crackdown on sex trafficking in Palm Beach County, Florida. They say about 200 arrest warrants have been issued in recent days, more expected. A spokesperson for Bob Kraft says they, quote, categorically deny that Mr. Kraft was engaged in any illegal activity. Because it is a judicial matter, they continue, we will not be commenting further. I mean, really, we don't know a whole lot about this, so I'm reluctant to talk much about it. I think we're on the same page with that, right? Certainly you can make, and people do, will make jokes about it. That seems to be the only place to go at this point, and I don't want to contribute to that, right? It's not really a laughing matter. It's Bob Kraft, it's Patriots, you know how you feel about them, but human trafficking is a serious thing, and this is a crime. This is a this is not something to laugh about talk about.
Listen, it's ugly.
Yeah,
it's ugly. And when you get into some of the specifics, it's coming out piecemeal, of course, like it always does on social media, where you get little bits of pieces of whatever this reporter finds interesting and whatever that reporter finds interesting, and facts or not, these are. It's happening. It's real. It's not just something that somebody made up. So, and it is ugly. So it's and the ripple effect is going to go far beyond the NFL. It sounds like whatever that means and whatever that leads to, it's been obviously an ongoing thing that has been labeled as a sting operation. That they knew something was going on. They checked it out and videoed and did all that, and they got a bunch of people, and Robert Kraft seems to be one of them.
So we won't be spending a whole lot of time on that. We certainly will deal with it when stuff comes out, right? We'll talk about it when we know more about it. In the meantime, we're talking about quarterbacks and what it would take. What type of leader do you want at the quarterback position for any team? Got phone lines open on this, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or you can send in something for our tweet sheet on Twitter. Wandering Jack sent this in. Leadership is tantamount. It's a great word. I need my quarterback to be the face of the team, take blame upon himself even when not at fault, and deflect praise to his teammates. Has to get in guys' faces when it's warranted, but also be his guy's biggest cheerleader. You need a guy his teammates want to battle with. All good points. All good points. And I like this part, too, from Wandering Jack. Take blame on himself even when not at fault. That's important, isn't it, Steve, publicly?
Yeah.
You know, when stuff goes bad and say, that's on me, my bad. Even when you know and everybody who saw it, whatever the mistake was, knows, you can't blame him.
Yeah.
Guys who do that, I think, are appreciated, right?
You stick up for your guys.
Yeah.
And I'll give you an example. And one of my good friends, I've known him for 3 decades now, maybe. Nah, almost 3 decades. Boomer Esiason. And everybody knows who Boomer is. He's on radio in New York. He's on NFL Today on CBS. He's a media guy now and has been for quite some time. He was Monday Night Football analyst and a really good quarterback, played for a number of football teams and was a great leader. He's one of the all-time great examples of this. And there was an article that came out, and it talked about guys all the way from Ryan Fitzpatrick and Phil Sims, and, of course, Boomer was mentioned in it. One of the things, again, all us here in Buffalo remember Frank Reich, and he was a college teammate for Boomer Esiason. Boomer was the starting quarterback at Maryland University, and because of an injury, he couldn't play. So Frank Reich goes into the game and wins the game for Maryland, like 13-8 or whatever. Boomer Esiason was genuinely so happy for Frank and his family. Boomer took Frank's family out to dinner. And Boomer's a college kid. He didn't have any kind of money. But he was so genuinely happy for Frank and his success that he took Frank's family out to dinner after Frank was the winning quarterback in his spot. Those kind of attributes aren't as easy to find as you might think they are. Leaders like that who are unselfish and genuinely happy for the success of others are hard to come by, particularly in a position that does all it can for the people around it to pump that guy up with hot air, for lack of a better term. You know, somebody's always saying, yes, it's not your fault. No, you're the best. You're the greatest. You know, it's a rock star mentality. And to have a guy who's above all that and can see through it and know, you know, he has a greater responsibility than just for himself, those guys are hard to find, particularly hard to find when they've got to also be strong-armed and mobile and highly intelligent.
Yeah, you know? And good.
And good talent, at being quarterback.
Talent. All of this means nothing if the guy can't play. I really
That's right.
That.
Now, and that's why, you know, they tend to look for the guy who can play and then worry about the leadership stuff later. And you get guys like Ben Roethlisberger. You know, you get guys who, like Ryan Leaf, you get guys who are Jeff George, you know, Jay Cutler, guys who are multifaceted talent-wise, but who aren't that great a leader. You know, teams don't play well around them. Now, Ben Roethlisberger's had a ton of success. He is a great quarterback. He's enormously gifted both in size and in accuracy and his ability to throw the football. And he's had an enormously successful run in Pittsburgh. But as it comes out now, at least late in his career, maybe it was different early in his career, but late in his career, some of that stuff of the people telling him it's not his fault and you're the greatest and it's not your, you know, you don't have to take responsibility for that, he started to listen to him a little too much, it sounds like.
What kind of a leader, I wonder, I'm interested in your opinion on this, do you believe Tom Brady is 6-time Super Bowl champion? One of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play. We have to acknowledge that, as difficult as it may be. Clearly a leader there. And I think in his case, Steve, again, outside looking in at the Patriots organization, he probably gets most of his respect as a great leader by his work ethic. And that's important, I think. You know, the stories are legendary of Brady's first one in, last one out, outworking everybody. Even when Brady had some career milestones in recent years, the stories came out about you just couldn't outwork him, and you couldn't outcompete him either, no matter what it was. Or, you know, drinking games even, right? There was a story about something
right.
like that. But I do think there's other guys like this too who I think have established themselves as strong leaders at quarterback because they just outwork people. They blow you away with how prepared they are. Peyton Manning was like this, maybe to a fault, right? But I wonder what you think of Brady's leadership style. He's not a cheerleader. He's been described sometimes, and people observe him sometimes, as sort of a whiner when things don't go well, right? You've seen him kind of whine.
He does that. He works the officials.
Yeah.
I think that's
But even with his teammates,
from.
I think you've seen him, you know, drop pass or something. He will whine about it and make his teammate look bad, I think. But I do think he's a strong leader, obviously. You can't win that much and not be. But it may be a different style, not necessarily a rah-rah guy, but I think maybe his work ethic and his work habits make him an easy guy for his teammates to follow. What do you think?
No question he works hard. And it's legendary that, you know, his hours and the things that he does to prepare himself. But I do think this, too, and I got to be honest, I think he gets a lot of help from Bill Belichick. Early in his career, Belichick made it clear that Tom needed to be as much of a target for criticism within the building as everybody else. And it's legendary now. Bill Belichick, they went there on Mondays and they have a low light reel. Everybody on the team has their worst plays on there or whatever. The worst plays in the game are, they got them cut up. And they go over that first thing on Monday morning after the game. They come out and they win and they beat the Bills, whatever, 37-23 or 37-24, whatever that score might be. They come in and all Belichick does, he starts with Tom Brady at the top and says, this is a horrible throw. This is a horrible decision. Your footwork's wrong here. You should have checked out of this here and gone to this. We told you this. He just cuts him up. So everybody else in that room sees the greatest quarterback of all time being the whipping boy for the head coach. Where do they think they're going to get away with, right? And then they also see him working as hard as he works. That sets the culture. But it all comes down to a head coach picking a guy at quarterback or having a guy at quarterback who he has communicated, hey, listen, you're not going to like it, but you're going to get ripped. And because I know if I rip you, nobody else is going to step out of line. That's part of your role as quarterback of the New England Patriots. You're going to be the first guy criticized, not the last. And because of that, the entire roster is like, well, if he's taking it like he's taking it, I'm going to do my best not to ever earn a ripping, you know?
Yeah.
I'm going to do my best not to get there. And that's the culture that they have there in New England. And Tom Brady, if you want to talk about how he's gifted, yeah, he works hard. But I think his biggest gift is his ability to sit there and take criticism from inside the building.
Who's the hardest working teammate you ever had?
Probably Bruce.
Really?
Yeah, well, Andre was right there.
Bruce, who missed all the training camp time, and
yeah, he didn't.
That didn't bother anybody.
No, it did a little bit, but listen, Bruce was he didn't take any days off. He might have not taken a practice off. He didn't take a day off. Jim was hardworking. Andre was very hardworking. You know that it goes down from there. I mean, who else are you going to? Daryl. I mean, all the greatest players on that team were the hardest workers. That's why that team was great. It wasn't because of role players playing special teams, believe me. It was those guys.
It was
those guys. Thurman Thomas, let me tell you something. Thurman Thomas would take a pounding on Sunday. I would go back and, you know, back in the day when I used to work out, which I don't anymore, you'd put on an old game tape and watch old games while you're on the elliptical or the treadmill or whatever. I was flabbergasted at the beating that Thurman took some games. I mean, just big hits, just on a normal 4 or 5 yard run at the end of it, you know. I'd never remember him taking a day. In fact, the only days off Thurman took was when Marv or the training staff said, listen, you need a day off. You're taking a day off. He's like, well, you know, he never went in there whining about a day off. And Bruce, Bruce wanted to play and he wanted to get ready. So, the hardest working guys on our team were the Hall of Famers.
That's leadership, right? That's leadership.
Are you kidding me?
How can you be a fourth-round pick?
How can you be a special teams guy, fifth wide receiver on this club, and then the L2 on the kickoff, and not, like, show up for work?
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Because you got a Hall of Fame caliber guys doing it. That's the way it was. That's the way the most successful teams are all that way.
We need a little bit of that on this show. Seriously, we need somebody to.
You want me to get on the Stairmaster and kill it?
We need somebody to set the tone for the rest of us work wise. A break here. We're coming back with more. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Back to One Bills Live. You see an outside shot of Orchard Park and the 12th man in the administration building over sections 222, 223.
Good seats still available.
New era.
You're compelled to say that.
I know.
Good seats still available. They are.
Yep.
Let's take a phone call here as we talk about the quarterback leadership. Rich in Rochester. Hello, Rich. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good to be on. I've got two questions for you guys. The first one is, I kind of concede New England winning the division. My concern are the Jets in Miami. I think the Bills need to go 3-1 against them in order to get a wild card, but I don't hear much about them. What's going on with them, and how do they look this year?
Who, right. The Dolphins and the Jets?
Yes.
Yeah. The Dolphins are a dumpster fire.
We just did a Dolphins segment the other day.
The Dolphins are really struggling. They don't have any well,
Armando Salguero was with us Tuesday. We talked about the Dolphin dumpster fire.
He thinks the Dolphins are a mess.
He thinks
they're gonna try and be a mess until a quarterback comes up in the draft that they want. The Jets are another story. They're almost identical to the Buffalo Bills. They've got a lot of optimism. They had a pretty good defense last year. Sam Darnold started to develop, and they think that they are going to make a run at it with Sam Darnold, and they've also got more cap money to spend than the Buffalo Bills do. So the Bills will be in contest with the Jets as to free agents and all that kind of thing. Now, I don't know that the Jets are in the market exactly for the same positions that the Buffalo Bills are. That may be one of the things that makes them unidentical. But the Jets are a lot like the Bills. They think they're looking for and expecting to take a big step forward this next year.
I'm not. Jets? Really?
Yeah, why not?
Don't think they're any good. I think the Bills have more talent than the Jets do.
Well, I do too, but I still think that's what the expectations are for the Jets. I think they think Sam Darnold's going to be really, really good this next year. Mm. And I'll tell you this, he does have a receiver on his stable that is really good. Quincy Enunwa is the real thing. He is a good player. So they've got Jamal Adams, a guy we spoke to at the Super Bowl, really a great player, good, and he's got some leadership skills. He's the alpha dog in their locker room right now, with or without Sam Darnold.
Jets don't scare me at all, Steve. Adam Gase and the Jets.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, too. Now, the reason they're not identical, too, is that they got Adam Gase.
They got a new coach to break in. They got Greg Williams as their defensive coordinator.
There's a lot of things to think about the Jets that why it may, you know, explode on the horizon before it really comes to its full potential, which, you know, obviously Bills fans are hoping for.
But Rich in Rochester is right about this. You can't split with the Dolphins and split with the Jets. They shouldn't have done it last year, this past season.
They should have swept the Dolphins.
Yeah,
with the
Jets.
With the one catch in the
end zone. 41-10, and then you lose to them at home?
The reason you lost to them at home is because you whooped them 41-10 there.
That can't happen. He's right. Yeah. Get four wins there. And I don't concede anything to the Patriots. And as we learned at 11:50 today, things are happening quickly in Patriot land. Who knows? I don't know if this is the Kraft thing has an effect on the one loss record, but I don't concede anything to them, right? I mean, we're not going to talk much about this. We don't know the details of what went on in Jupiter, Florida. But, again, the Patriots in the middle of what has to be a distracting incident. It has to be distracting to have your owner under arrest.
Distracting in February is one thing.
You're right. Where are they in September?
September. And they had the same kind of distractions coming off a Super Bowl they lost to the Philadelphia Eagles, where Bill Belichick and Tom Brady didn't like each other and Gronk was going to retire. And
they never had a distraction like this. Nobody
right. Not
has.
Like this. Yeah. Not like this. This is different. No question about it.
All right, a break. We're coming back. Field Yates from ESPN is going to join us when we return. Come on back. One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.